Impact of Influence, The Murdoch Family Murders. This is the unfolding story of a powerful South Carolina family, the mysterious deaths they are linked to, and our quest to bring you the truth.
Hello, friend. Love that you're here with us. Always so grateful that you decided to spend time with us. Matt Harris, Seton Tucker. Hello, Seton.
Hello.
Where would they find us?
You can find us on Facebook at Murdoch Podcast or our website, which is murdochpodcast.com.
And we have another case that we're working on. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have an episode out by the end of this week. Which leads us to our guest today. Introduce her, Seton.
We are very excited to have Jen Wood with Fitz News on with us. So, Jen, tell us a little bit about Fitz News and your role with them.
So, Fitz News is an independent news agency based out of Columbia, South Carolina. And I've been there, I guess a little over 2 years, and I'm their director of research. So I basically coordinate all of our research for all of our stories. Occasionally I write, but not as much as everybody else. It's totally not my bag. I'm just like digging and making spreadsheets.
We were talking earlier, and your background is as a private investigator. Is that correct?
Yep. So my degree's in criminal justice from Michigan State. And after I graduated, I did a lot of work, different jobs, but I've worked in insurance liability claims. And also when I lived in Indianapolis, I was a private investigator for about 7 years.
So research is your jam.
Yes. Digging deep.
Yeah.
Digging the dirt.
Yep. I like finding stuff.
Yeah. Or maybe you don't. And then you at least found out the truth, right? Sometimes you dig and there's nothing.
Rule of thumb is I never dig into friends.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. If you're not going to tell me, I don't want to know.
Right.
Well, I think we heard that from a few attorneys along the way that they don't like to represent friends primarily because they like to be paid.
Well, if you dig deep enough in anybody's nose, you'll find a booger, is the old saying.
Yep, that's true. Let's talk about the FOIA request you did for Alec Murdoch's jailhouse communications. Why did you decide to do this request?
So part of my job is to submit FOIAs, come up with ideas for FOIAs, and then track them, you know, as it goes. We have so many open FOIAs, so we track them. And Will and I were talking, and he was like, I'm kind of curious what kind of messages Alex is getting in jail and who he's calling. And I said, well, you know, we can FOIA for that stuff. And he said, let's do it. So we submitted it shortly after he was sentenced by Judge Newman. We weren't quite sure what we would get back. We just kind of threw everything at the wall and just to see what would stick. And when we got the phone logs and messages back, I sent them to him. And I said, you're going to want to read this now.
Yeah. When were they sent, Alec? What prison was he in when he was getting these letters?
So I think it was after he was sentenced, but while he was still in, you know, the prison where they evaluate them before they determine where they're going to, you know, be incarcerated.
Gotcha.
More permanently. So we did it from the date of the sentencing to whenever I submitted it. And then, I mean, obviously we're going to submit for more because it was interesting to see what he was receiving from people.
Yeah, obviously the ladies that were reaching out to him were really interesting. Some people seemed like they were just reaching out because they wanted to offer support in some way. Or what were your takeaways?
I was surprised at how many different people reached out to him offering support. Offering, you know, I don't believe that you're guilty. I'm here if you want to talk. I have heard people question, you know, whether or not they had enough to find him guilty, but, you know, that was up to the jury. The jury did. But the number of people that said, I believe you, I'm here if you want to talk, it shocked me.
So about how many letters did he receive in that time?
I want to say, let me look. I'm looking at it right now. I want to say like 20, and there were a couple people that sent him multiple messages.
Yeah, I wonder if these people are, even the ones that reached out for support, are serial reaching out to support people that constantly reach out to inmates.
It did seem like there was at least one who seems like that's kind of the thing that she does.
Yeah, there were a couple in there that's kind of the vibe that I got, that this is not new to them. They know the system. And for them to be reaching out so quickly, I mean, you have to get an account to email an inmate. So they must know the process.
Oh, good point. Yeah, good point. Because you wouldn't, if you asked me right now, how do I get a hold of a prisoner, yep, I would have no dang idea.
No, there's a lot of protocol. I was reading up on it this morning. You have to set up an account, and it's run through a service. I guess that's how they clear who is calling and monitor. Because if they're getting calls saying, "Hey, bring me a gun and help me escape," the jail needs to know about that.
Yeah, yeah. How about that? Let's talk about the saucy ones.
Yeah, the love ones.
Nicolette was my favorite by far. I mean, she came in hot and heavy. I think I love you. I think about you every day. I was like, whoa. I mean, that was the first one she sent was, I think I love you.
Wow.
What else did she say?
She said, I swear in my life and on my soul, I'll never say a single word to anyone important or not important. I genuinely care for you.
Okay.
I mean, she just came right in and said it.
I wonder if these women knew that these communications would potentially become public.
The case in Colorado, I'm the name's failing me, where the woman and their children were just murdered by the husband. They had FOIA the letters that he was getting and they were released. So I don't think it's like an unprecedented FOIA. It's pretty common.
Yeah, that was Chris Watts, I think. Yeah, and he did receive love letters.
I don't think it's uncommon. And I think in some way they must know that all of the stuff is public record.
When you're in love, the heart says what it wants to say without thinking about that possibility.
Exactly.
I've seen some people online bothered by the release of these messages saying that, you know, they feel that this information is private and that even incarcerated people have a basic right to privacy. I know when the phone calls were released, you know, before the trial with family members and Alec, we didn't, you know, play any of them on our show because we felt like maybe it was an invasion of privacy. This feels a little different to me just because it's post-conviction and it's not actual phone calls or messages, but did you receive any backlash on that, Jen?
Obviously you get the backlash on social media no matter what you do. But, you know, this, I think post-conviction is a lot different than the phone calls in the recordings, which honestly, I'm still surprised that they were released. I mean, to me, they were interesting. They were definitely very informative, but I'm still surprised that those were released via FOIA. But these to me seem a little more, I mean, he's in prison, he's convicted. Attorney-client communications are still privileged because I know they're working on an appeal, but to me, these are public record and there's really nothing in there that, I mean, you don't see communications from his family. I don't know if that's because they're not communicating with them, but there, to me, there is nothing in there questionable. It was just more interesting.
I guess the only thing would be that, like, this woman who says she loves Alec may have some sort of mental issue, and now it's out there, and, you know, people could go at her about it. That's would be the side, I guess.
Yeah, that could be absolutely something, but, you know, there's no identifying information.
Oh, there's not?
Okay. No, I mean, just their names. You don't even get their last names unless they write them in the text. And even, like, you know, there's one, "Hey, Mr. Murdoch, my name is Brittany," and her last name's redacted, and where she's from is redacted.
All right, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah.
I'm going to fess up. I did look on social media and see if I could locate any of these ladies just out of genuine curiosity. I mean, maybe that's wrong.
But all you have is like their name and their state or something.
Yeah.
Their name, their state, and their last initial, like the first letter of their last names.
Gotcha.
I did look up Lacey. Was it Lacey K? I tried to find her. If you're listening, Lacey K, we'd love to talk to you and just hear a little bit about your motivation to talk. You know, and when we had Jay Bender on our podcast in the past, he felt like the jailhouse tapes were fair game. He thinks everything should be should be available to the public.
Yeah. I mean, I understood the backlash that we got on those. I mean, I could see, I can always see both sides of, you know, I can see both points of view on that. But, you know, as a media organization, you know, our goal is to get information and release it. This to me is a little less controversial, but yeah, of course we're going to get backlash on everything.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's been reported that Ehrlich has been relocated to the McCormick Correctional Institute. That was reported, I think, by the New York Post and maybe Law and Crime. And this appears to be kind of a dangerous place. I mean, in 2020, there was an inmate who was stabbed. In 2017, there were some riots where there were inmates on top of the roof. Do you plan on doing more requests for these type of records?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, just, I mean, for, I think it's fascinating. And I think people were really interested in it. I'm sure other outlets will start doing it too, which I totally fine. But yeah, I think we'll probably keep checking those, you know, at least, you know, periodically to see, you know, what he's getting, what's, what people are sending him if they die off after, you know, because he isn't responding that I can tell.
I believe Ehrlich's attorney, Jim Griffin, issued a statement. Matt, what did that say?
Jim Griffin said he has no girlfriend in prison, out of prison, anywhere. He's received messages, letters, and a lot of support. To my knowledge, he's not responded to any of them. He's also received unsolicited contributions to his canteen account.
Yes, I would be interested to see who's put money on his canteen for him now. His purchases on his canteen was another interesting FOIA. That was a great FOIA. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It does feel a little bit voyeuristic, but it was nonetheless interesting. Oh, Dwayne wants to know what he bought.
So when he was in jail, he bought, I remember he bought the hot beef sticks. He really liked those. Ramen noodles are a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
I think you can buy, you know, clothing, extra sets of clothing. He bought that. There was some kind of like chip mix that's only, they really only make them for prison that he bought a lot of those. It was basic stuff, but it was just interesting to see what he was spending that money on.
You know, when we interviewed Jim Griffin, he said that Ehrlich really had not seen his family member since he was incarcerated in the fall. I wonder what the visitation is like in the McCormick facility. Do you have any idea?
I think you have to register to visit them. I don't know what the frequency is for visitors. I do know that they do have, in the South Carolina correctional facilities, they have access to inmate tablets. They're very locked down, but they're allowed to use the messaging system, which those messages from, you know, the ones we FOIA'd came through that. They have limited ability to like research, so they can, you know, if they're working on their appeal, they can do that. They do all their phone calls via that tablet. And then they also use it as, you know, if they get in trouble, they take it away for 30, 60, or 90 days.
That's what I do with my kids. Yeah. It's nice to have that tablet.
So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, before we let you go, I want to talk a little bit about your big interview you had this week with Steve Peterson, who is a private investigator who does work with Andy Savage, who represented Sandy Smith, Stephen Smith's mother, for a brief period of time. What were your biggest takeaways with this interview?
I thought it was interesting listening to his investigative process. You know, I know he used to be a DEA agent and was working in the capacity of a private investigator. And just hearing, you know, he was boots on the ground with this. He was out there knocking on doors, doing the, you know, questioning of the people that had come up in that incident report. He was, you know, relaying information back to law enforcement. I mean, I thought it was just interesting listening to all the work that he had done and what he had gathered, how he relayed that to the SLED investigation team. To me, the most interesting thing that I thought the iPad was fascinating. I don't know what you guys thought, but, you know, the fact that he found out that these PIs had gone to Sandy and told them they were looking at Stephen's murder and asked for the iPad, and she gave it to them, you know, grateful for help. And it was destroyed when SLED went and did a search warrant for it.
Unbelievable.
We actually got a question on our Facebook page, Murdoch Podcast, this week about that. And I think a lot of people seem to be confused about this iPad, thinking that he is the person who took the iPad. But listening to the interview, it does not sound like he was.
My understanding is that the private investigators were working. Somehow they were connected to a man named Greg Roman, and he was writing articles on the Murdoch case. And I don't know, you know, if they were hired by him or if they were tied to Greg Parker, but it definitely wasn't tied to Andy Savage or Steve Peterson. Steve Peterson just, you know, had asked about the iPad, and Sandy told him what happened, and he tracked it down and provided that information to SLED so that they could go obtain it from them.
Because the rumor for a while was that law enforcement of some sign, FBI or somebody, had lost the iPad, and then eventually found out that it was, what did he call him, Daryl and his other brother Daryl from...
Daryl and Daryl had
taken it.
But they, I was on Nancy Grace with Eric Bland, and Eric Bland did confirm that SLED does have the iPad, and they are working on getting the information off of it.
Okay.
They also have Stephen's phone, and that was successfully opened, and they were able to download all of the information off of that.
Well, we've learned from the Murdoch thing, try the birth date.
Yeah, that's a good way because
if Paul's phone took forever to open, they didn't think maybe I should try his birthday.
Well, another big takeaway I had by listening to the interview was that it doesn't appear that the Murdochs have any direct connection to the murder of Stephen Smith.
Right, and that, I mean, I still don't know the source of that rumor. I mean, I have a lot of friends in Hampton, and they said that the rumor mill there is crazy. Most of the time it's fairly accurate, but I mean, from what Steve Peterson was telling Will, it sounds like Buster and Paul were both confirmed to be out of the county that night that Stephen Smith was murdered.
Wow.
People may not want to hear it, but that's what he found. He has no reason to lie about it.
Well, and I like what your boss Will has said, you know, his job is to find the truth wherever it takes him.
Right. And, you know, I think I don't want to speak for Sandy because, you know, she's a grieving mom and it's hard for me to put myself in her shoes. But I think she just wants answers. She wants to know what happened that night. I mean, no matter what happened, he was murdered. He was a victim of homicide, whether it was vehicular or, you know, some other manner. I think she wants to know what happened to him.
She said that all along, that she wants to know the truth, whatever that may be.
Yep. Right. And I pray that the exhumation and the autopsy, the second autopsy, does provide her with some answers. And it does sound, I mean, they're not talking a lot about it, but it does sound like it was productive. And they were able to collect additional evidence from his body. So, I'm hopeful that it is, because it had to have been traumatic for her as a mother.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hope that she gets the answers she needs sooner rather than later.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jen, thank you.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, and tell us where we can read more about these jailhouse calls and the rest of the coverage that y'all are doing on Murdoch and many other things.
Okay, so our website, it's Fitz News, FITS News, NEWS.com. And our social media, it's all we post everything on Twitter and Facebook. So that's also all FitzNews.com as well.
Perfect. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Seton.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
And if you want to reach out to us, where do they find us, Seton Tucker?
You can find us on Facebook, which is Murdoch Podcast, or on our website, which is murdochpodcast.com.
MattHarrisPodcast@gmail.com as well. So we've got a case that will be debuting within the next few days. We'll continue with the Impact of Influence title. And this is the case of Shanquella Robinson. Here's a sneak peek.
My mom's was out and about somewhere, you know, and she called me and told me she had passed. I just started crying. I just holler. When he said alcohol poison, I wasn't going for that. Nah, you ain't gonna tell me no. You're not gonna tell me no alcohol poison. Not at all. She my daughter, but she everybody's daughter. She your daughter. But this father right here is the one that I heard. Cause I can't see her. Can't hear her voice. But in due time, God gonna bring it to the head. It's coming. You know. It's coming. For these friends to come and snatch her life from up under her like that, it just cold-hearted, and it just tore me up. It took a lot. Those families that those kids belong to, they about to suffer, hurt, just like I am.
Look for season 2 of Impact of Influence, the Shanquella Robinson case, coming soon.